Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. I let you love what I thought it was funny.
It is the Savage Nation. The world is burning. The Marxists are ruling. London, tuberculosis capital of Western Europe as a result of immigration. The United States of America, Red Cross bans Christmas to not offend Muslims. Dateline, Austria, man fined for yodeling in Austria because it offends Muslims. Dateline, Karachi, terrorists captured. Dateline, New York, subway bomber captured. Dateline, anywhere on earth, Islamofascism is on the rise and the West is in demise. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. And you want unlimited immigration. You want unlimited immigration while London is now the tuberculosis capital of the Western world. I wrote a book, an essay back in 1980 entitled Immigrants and Epidemics. I had intended to make it into a book. But even after a career that at that time consisted of about 16 books in the field of health, none of my New York publishers or others would touch that book because they said it would be very, very offensive to talk about the fact that immigrants were coming in with diseases. I said, but wait a minute, my grandfather was an immigrant. He had to go through Ellis Island. Didn't you see The Godfather where Don Corleone had some kind of illness and he had to sit it out in a little room. He had to wait it out till the disease was cured. Yeah, but not anymore. That doesn't apply because we have morons running the world. We have morons running the Western world where immigrants are now given more rights than the folks who are citizens. And now, as a result, various immigrant groups have brought illnesses into the West, such as tuberculosis, which has now made London the TB capital of Western Europe. The number of people infected with TB has jumped by 50% in London in the last decade. Now, where do you think it came from? Why would it go up rather than go down? Why would it go up rather than go down? Well, you have to read on into the article to know where the white plague is coming from. You see, TB was once known as the white plague because of the loss of skin color in patients, not for any racial reasons. What you also don't know is that tuberculosis was virtually wiped out after the introduction of drugs and vaccinations in the 1960s. But it has surged in recent years, including drug-resistant strains, because of people who have been born overseas and who have arrived in England and have spread the disease. Now, of course, the liars in London are saying the rise in TB has nothing to do with migration and immigrants. That is because they're trying to distort science and medicine itself. The fact of the matter is, it's directly related to immigrants and their epidemics. I realize that this is not a topic you care to talk about prior to Christmas, so I'll give you another little story to talk about. When I was reviewing the articles that have been posted on michaelsavage.com this morning, the one that struck me the most insane came out of Austria. An Austrian man, age 63, a man on a pension, was sued by Muslim neighbors for yodeling in Austria. That's right. Okay, they got the flavor of what a yodel is. That's a yodel. Traditional. It was used to communicate from hill to dale. But you see, the folks from Islamicville don't like yodeling. They say it interferes with their prayer to God or whatever, their prayer to Allah and their Muslim prayers, and then yodeling should be outlawed. And a judge in Austria actually ruled against a man from Austria and said his yodeling was racist. Washington, D.C., Obama adopts UN manifesto on rights of indigenous peoples. Obama announced the U.S. would reserve this position, reverse the position of the Bush administration, and become the last nation to drop its opposition to a declaration on the rights of indigenous peoples. I have no idea what that means. Tell me what the rights of indigenous peoples are and what it means. Does anyone know what that means? It means they're going to shake you down for money, even though you had nothing to do with anything that happened to indigenous peoples 200 years ago. Okay? There are so many other stories for me to get to today. I don't know where to begin other than where I began, and I would invite you to call me on Open Mic to Mic Day. I warned you that Scott Brown was a phony. In fact, I was the first one in the media to warn you that Scott Brown would stab you in the back. In fact, I warned you that after he had his victory in Massachusetts in the Kennedy seat, for the Kennedy seat, I said, not so fast. I told you over and over again that looking at the man's past, he would probably vote with liberals, and he did. Yesterday, Scott Brown backed the repeal of the military's don't ask, don't tell policy, therefore joining the Democrats and liberals and giving them the one vote over the 60-vote threshold that they need to repeal this law, which most commanders in the military say will destroy the military's, let us say, capacity to fight. In fact, the head of the Marine Corps says he doesn't want to see men coming home without legs because of such social policies. And I trust him more than I do politicians on this matter. It's interesting to me that during the screaming debates about abortion, liars like Barbara Boxer would say, who knows more about a woman's health than a woman herself? Who knows more about women's health than women themselves? Our bodies, ourselves. Well, I would ask you, who knows more about the health of our soldiers in a combat zone than the Marine generals and those who are actually fighting the battles, as opposed to the fat contractors in waiting, sitting in Washington like the Stepford wives that they are? Judge rules that a certain book was correct about Obamacare. A judge has ruled that only one book was correct about Obamacare and that it is unconstitutional. A judge has ruled, in fact, that trickle-up poverty was 100% correct and that Obamacare is unconstitutional. How many other things are in my book which are ahead of their time, which will eventually be shown to be correct? Let's start with the Star Treaty. The vermin on the left are trying to vote on this over the weekend while you're doing your Christmas shopping. The vermin in the media are going along with the Star Treaty. They want us to capitulate to Russia and turn us into a third world nation. They want to push this forward without a discussion about it. They want us to sign a treaty with Russia without the American people even having the opportunity to understand what a devastation this will mean. Again, I have a full chapter on it in Trickle Up Poverty. I think it's the most important chapter in the book. I think it's far more important even than Obamacare, but it's getting virtually no discussion because, once again, you are a busy person. And once again, you don't have the time to study these things. And so over the weekend, your verminous representatives in the Senate plan to vote on Don't Ask, Don't Tell and a bill of amnesty for illegal aliens. That's right. They initially, you thought like a fool, that once 70 Democrats were thrown out, Obama would get the message, the Democrats would suddenly come to the center. But again, only one talk show host told you otherwise. Only one man in the business told you what the vermin on the left would do. Only one man told you what this lifetime Leninist Marxist called Obama would do. Only one man told you what this gangster administration would do. Only one man told you what Pelosi would do, and they're doing it. I told you that they would push through every last bit of their agenda that they get away with in the last days of this failed Congress while you were wrapping Christmas presents. And sure enough, I was right. So what's the good of being right? Tell me what's the good of being right when the country is fundamentally finished. How can you watch the last show of Larry King and not realize what this media has become? You see this sarcophagus, this corpse with false teeth, inviting his old friends from the Atlantic City boardwalk to be on the show with him. It's as though it was an old, it was like a fest of guys sitting around on a boardwalk talking about their varicose veins. I had never seen anything as bad in the history of television. I watched it because a friend in the media told me to watch it. I turned it on. I was stunned by it. I could not believe that Larry King was still on television to begin with. I was never a big fan of his. Admittedly, 20 years ago when I was on a book tour and he was a radio host, he was pretty good on radio. I remember showing up at his studios in Washington, and I had written a book. I don't know what aspect of health it was on. And he did something interesting at that time. He was a very good radio host 20 years ago when I was on a book tour. He approached the book as if he had not read it and ask questions that the man in the street would ask. That's because he doesn't read books. In that regard, he's very much like George Bush. He only reads titles. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is La Bamba time on the Savage Nation. I always loved this song years ago. So let's feel good. What's the difference if we have a bunch of traitorous scum running everything? What's the difference? Enjoy yourself. It's like the Titanic's going down and we're back on the poop deck listening to the... You know why they called it a poop deck, don't you? Or do I have to spell it out for you? No. I have a question for you. Do you care about any of this? I don't think you do. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you something that you will kind of be able to relate to. I don't blame you. You're numb already from the whole year. And, you know, you got other things to worry about. I know what they are. Not to the nth degree. But I want to ask you something. Number one, this is already the end of December, and I'm off beginning Monday, as most hosts are, on an extended vacation slash recovery from my back injury. And I will be around, or maybe I'll call in once in a while, and hopefully you know, things will be better. But what was my best show or best topic of the year 2010? If you're a regular listener of the Savage Nation, without thinking too hard, what would you say was the most memorable show, the most memorable statement that I said or did in the year 2010? Number two, if you had extra money, unlimited money, if you were a rich man, what sports car would you buy or what car would you buy? I know it's like trivial. How can you talk about it? Because I still am an American. I still kind of have a car thing. And I have been looking at buying a Mercedes SLS, but I'm not sure I want it for a couple of reasons. A, I don't like sports cars. I just like the look of it because it looks like the whole front and side with the gull wings looks like a 300 SL. I don't like the rear. The rear is stumpy. It looks like some kind of Japanese Celica kind of. There was a car once that was... or a Buick something or other. They really failed on the... I don't know what the Germans in the rear, because there are German cars that have very dominant rears on them. And the rear of the car is very important because that's what you usually see when you're on the highway and there's a German car on the road. All you're looking at is the rear, is the exhaust pipes. That's generally true, whether it's the Audi, which is an astounding car, the new V10. I wouldn't buy the car for a couple of reasons. I don't really want that car, but... it's an astounding piece of engineering. I know we're not supposed to talk about it. Like, what do you care about cars? Drive a Prius and save the world. You know what I say? You know what I mean? Get yourself... don't tell me what to think and what to do. You know what I mean? I was saving rainforests while you were driving around in your father's Chrysler, New York, and polluting Brooklyn. I know you're all living in Los Angeles now with Priuses, but don't lecture me about the environment. I sacrificed a lot of my life for the environment, so I'll do what I want with my money. So I'm asking you, what sports car would you buy? Would you buy a Ferrari Italia? Would you buy... I mean, what's your dream car? Let's put it to you that way. No, how can you talk about it at a time like this? The answer is because I want to. Because I like cars. And I know the various cars that are out there. And as I say, I mean, I looked at the Ferrari Italia, the ones that caught fire. I know you're not supposed to mention that either. Did you hear about that? The first time in modern history that a brand of that stature had to recall like 300 cars... because the cars caught fire. They're hushing it up. It's a gorgeous car. They copied the rear of the Enzo. Talk about rear ends. But, it's like the Goldie Hawn story I told you years ago. When she was young, people would stop eating when she walked into a restaurant. They would gasp. She was so perfect. And as she got older and time and gravity caught up with her and every other old star from the 60s, I found that there's an inverse proportion between the relative height of the derriere and the amount of liberalism. The further the rear end descends, the higher the liberalism goes up, the quotient, the LQ goes up. In other words, the less popular they are as a beauty, the higher and more insane they become as a liberal. So I know a lot about rears, whether it's in a human being or in a car. And I got to tell you that the rear on the Ferrari Italia is a direct copy of the... as I say, the Enzo, in some ways, unbelievably beautiful, very sleek. But because it caught fire, I don't really want it. That's number two. Number one, no one's calling about anything I said. Isn't that interesting? I know the lines would light up on this. Not one word about what I said this year. All you're calling about is your dream car and Obama this, Obama that. Urgent need this, urgent need that. Joe Biden. Where is Joe Biden? Where is Joe Biden? I don't know where he went. He's like the disappearing vice president. I mean, most people know the vice president's a figurehead position anyway. Where is Joe Biden now that we don't need him? I know he lashed out at the Republicans because they're blocking passage of the START Treaty, which, as you well know, is the death of America's national security. But that's where Biden comes in. That's what he's best at. Oh, here we got one up in Portland. Jeff in Portland, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I think the best show that you did was about the whaling and the anti-whalers.
Tell me what it was, because I have honestly forgotten what I did.
Well, you were talking about the anti-whaling protesters, and I guess the part that was really memorable to it about it for me was the part where you said you weren't for whaling, but you were anti-whaler.
That's right. In other words, I like whales, but I don't like I like whales, but the anti-whalers I like less than the fishermen.
Yeah, and I think as far as cars go, I mean, you got to look at the Mosler MT-900.
I don't know. Anything that's called a Mazda, I don't want. Well, see, in other words, it's a bias. I like the name Ferrari, Porsche, Mercedes. When you say Mazda, I think of a go-kart or a snowblower.
Mosler.
You say Mazda, I think of a snowblower.
Mosler. Mosler.
Oh, the car is a Mosler?
Yes.
What is a Mosler? There's an automobile called a Mosler?
Yeah. I mean, it's a limited production deal. But
who makes it? Is it made up by the Danes make it somewhere near the North Pole for Christmas?
It's made here in the States, a guy named Warren Mosler. He's a British fellow.
Oh, yeah. You see, these one-off cars worry me. They're like kit cars. I mean, what do you do when something breaks? You call up Mr. Mosler's wife and say that your husband made a car that broke?
Savage.
There's a moon out tonight. Let's go strolling. There's a girl.
It is the Savage Nation. We're playing real American music. We are talking about a number of topics. All the news of the day, which you're absolutely not interested in. The traitors in the White House, which you're, of course, excited about, but you can't do much about because the Republicans are not but a hairbreadth away from them in their capitulation towards socialism. And so I've raised two other issues. One is, what is the best show I did all year, or the best topic, or the best anything you heard on the air in the year 2010, because this is likely my last broadcast in 2010. And then I asked you, if you had unlimited money, or you're rolling in money and you're celebrating because Obama just passed the Bush tax cuts again for the rich who put him in power, despite all the protestations to the contrary, what would you do with the money you saved that would have gone to the government to give to people less fortunate than yourself? What kind of car would you buy yourself now that you have enough money, extra money that they're not going to take away from you? Now you can buy another sports car, a boat. You don't have to give it to poor people or to illegal immigrants or anything like that, or give it to the UN. In other words, you could be greedy and like an average American has been forever and really enjoy it. What car would you buy with the money you just saved as a result of the Obama tax cuts? Lance in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, it's very important that you consider when you buy an automobile that it should have the name doctor associated with this. This would be Porsche, Dr. Porsche, the turbo by Porsche, originally called the 930, and now they're called the 911 turbo.
Oh, yeah, he was a very famous car designer. He designed the Volkswagen for a Herr Hitler.
And his degree was honorary. I don't know if you know this. He didn't study for it. He was
Some of the finest doctorates are honorary. Right. Depending on how much money you spend, you can get a better doctorate than you can earn.
Absolutely. And more to the point, Dr. Porsche, before he had his doctorate, in about 1900, designed the first hybrid automobile for an Austrian company called Lohner, L-O-H-N-E-R.
Oh, no. Some of these guys, and still are, we have native geniuses in the world that are amazing. They don't need degrees. Absolutely. Look, let me tell you about Porsche. I've never owned one for a couple of reasons. I don't like a car that sounds like a machine shop on wheels. And Porsches always sounded like machine shops on wheels. To me, I know the drivers love them. They swear by them. And then it took me a long while to adapt to a rear-engine car. I never liked them. I like big engines in the front of my car to pull me through turns rather than having a big engine behind me that pushes me through turns. It's a matter of stylistic design. I happen to have a car right now that has a big engine behind me that can push me through turns, and it's a little tricky to drive, by the way.
Is this the Ferrari 430?
Yes.
Yeah, so the later model Porsches are water-cooled, and they have hydraulic lifters. They won't sound like a machine shop on wheels. That was the old air-cooled stuff.
I understand. Well, let's talk about it for another minute. I also don't like shifting, particularly living in San Francisco where there are so many hills. I have a repetitive nightmare of a Volkswagen Bug that I once owned in New York City. I mean, you drove that thing up a hill. If you got stopped at a light, you know, you're sitting on the brake. Then you have to put it in gear. Then you have to put the clutch in. Then you have to quickly throw it into first gear, let go of the brake, and pray to God it doesn't stall. So I don't like shifting. I really much prefer paddle shifting if I'm going to shift at all.
Well, then get the Porsche with the PDK, Porsche Doppelkupplung. You know,
so let me ask you something. Which Porsche dealer do you work for? Because you're really intent on this, aren't you?
Well, I do not work for a Porsche dealer, but I know that locally you had the advertisement of Sun and Porsche.
I hear you. But are you really still, you own a Porsche?
I've had many Porsches, only four-cylinder models and very old. I never had one newer than 1962, but I followed that mark for quite a while.
Most guys I know who drive old Porsches basically are guys from New York who couldn't make it in the garment center and went to San Francisco and went into the mattress business. And they really never made any money, but they still drive around in like a 1982 Porsche Targa, and they still wear like pants without belts that they tie at the top thinking that they're wild and cool. But all right, it's a personality thing. I don't know. Enjoy it. That's all. I'm not into it. It's not the German thing. Don't get me wrong. I love the Mercedes that I have. I swear to God, I mean, it's the best car I've ever owned in my life. For years, I didn't drive a Mercedes. I said, oh, they're for fat old people. Then as I got heavier and older, I bought one, and it really was made for fat old people. It's a great car. I mean, I hope it's not only for fat old people, but for years, I sneered at Mercedes. Ah, it's only for fat old men. As I put on weight and became older, I bought one at the insistence of people who know more about cars than I do. And the truth is I previously had a BMW. The BMW is a little bumpy on the road, truthfully. I don't want to knock it. It's a great driver's car, I suppose. But the Mercedes S600 with the V12 is the most astounding machine I've ever driven in. And the number of reasons. Okay, you put it on C, which is comfort. It feels like an old Chrysler New Yorker if you want it to be like that. And it's soft, and the seats are like sofas in a house. You press a button and it goes into S or Su or whatever, Sport. And as you well know, it changes the points at which the car upshifts, downshifts. It changes the level of dampening in the shock absorbers, changes the braking points, and the car becomes a different animal altogether underneath that skin. And the sticker says it'll do 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds, which is amazing for a 5,000-pound car. I don't particularly drag race. I don't, you know. That's not what I'm into, but I do like a car that has power. I've always liked the feeling of power under my feet, which truthfully, you want to talk about boats. I have a boat with twin 1,000-horsepower Caterpillar diesels, which are phenomenal engines, and I love American technology. Let me put it to you that way. That's the start with. Then I like technology in general. Then I like engines. Ever since I've been a little kid, I've always been in love with engines. I suppose there will be a crime soon for revering and loving the internal combustion engine. I understand that that's possible, that soon we'll have to be driving around with cars that have rubber bands in them or that you have to shovel manure into them to make them run. But until that time, I'm going to enjoy my engines. So I had a boat before this one, a Grand Banks, which I sold, by the way, in Florida. After shipping it to Florida, where I thought I would live for a while, I used it four times. After using it in California for, I don't know, 8 years, I bought it new. It had twin Cummins diesels. The Cummins engines were gorgeous. They were great. Cummins diesels, you should know if you're in the boating world, were designed from the ground up to be marine engines. They were really great engines. I did have some troubles with them along the way, mainly in the exhaust, but that had nothing to do with the engine. It was really in the manufacturing of the boat in Malaysia and the connection of the exhaust pipes by the yard. So I wouldn't blame that on Cummins. But the boat overall and the engines in particular were fabulous. Okay. So now I got another boat, a newer one, a bigger one, that has twin 1,000 horsepower, but not Cummins. This time they're Caterpillar, American engines. They're supercharged. I think that their turbos are supercharged. I don't exactly know which. I don't even know the difference, truthfully, between a turbocharger and a supercharger, I must admit. But when I take this monster out, this 80,000-pound boat on my own, which I do, and I can go slow, which I like slow. I like to go out with the dog on a decent day. I like to look at the birds. I like to hear the sound of water against the hull. I don't go fair. I go 10 knots. I like to go slowly. But let us say you're on a, it's a busy day on a Saturday or Sunday, and you're, it's filled with sailboats or morons on kayaks or sail fins under the Golden Gate Bridge who think that they're Icarus and nobody can hurt them, and they challenge freighters coming in from the Orient. They think the freighter could slow. It takes a freighter a mile to stop, and these schmucks are running right in front of the freighter's bow. And you hear the guy, the captain of the freighter, honking his foghorn, get out of the way, moron. The moron doesn't get out of the way. I don't know how more people aren't killed. But anyway, let's say I have that kind of situation. I like the ability to dodge a moron or to get out of the way of a moron or to deflect from a moron in a sailboat who thinks also that his boat can't sink and he won't veer course even by 1 degree, even though if you're heading at each other, saying, well, you're a powerboat in his mind. I'm a sailboat. I have priorities. Instead of a compromise and moving slightly, they didn't move at all. All right, so I'm a very defensive boater, and I don't like to create wake, this and that, so I'll divert by a large margin away from another boat in order to avoid any kind of problem. I don't want to hurt anybody. When you slam these throttles forward, I do not care what RPM you're running at. This 80,000-pound boat, you ask anyone who's ever been on the boat with me, this boat will jump like it's a car that you just hit into the down kick gear, whatever you want to call it, or downshift on it. It's hard to believe that a 40-ton vessel can actually lurch forward when you slam the throttles forward. But it's something to behold to listen to those superchargers or turbos kick in on that engine. It's beautiful. The sound is beautiful. So you see what I'm talking about now? Cars, boats, planes, trains, and soon it will be dogs. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Are you little star?
Favorite songs, Little Star. I don't know why. It reminds me of sex or something when I was young, you know. What do you know when you're young? Nothing. Nothing. All you know is you can't stand school and you want to go out, and that's the end of it. You get older, you realize that's all you want, too. But then you're in talk radio, it becomes sort of addictive, and it becomes your be-all and end-all of existence in some ways. Even when you're suffering from a backache, as I am. So I got an email from my friend Dr. Sarfati, who says that my favorite shows of the year were your discussion of Henry Miller and those Henry Miller shows and readings from Trickle Up Poverty. Jack loves that book. He really does. He knows the danger we're in. But look, I'm not going to go back there. And so what? Let Congress pass the Star Treaty so we become impotent on the world stage. Let us capitulate like Chamberlain did to Hitler. What's the difference? And let him pass a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Let us cripple the military even further. What's the difference? The important thing is that you feel good. And we can talk amongst ourselves. In New York City, WOR, Rob, you say that your favorite show was what, Rob?
By far the best show. It wasn't actually a show, but you had a caller call. And I believe it was a Jewish guy, too, that was an associate of the mob. And he just started going into detail about his career as a mafia hitman and all kinds of things that he was involved in and how, finding God had turned his life around after he was shot.
Remember that show? The guy in San Diego. That was this year. I remember that show.
Michael, unbelievable. I couldn't. I almost drove off the road.
I remember that guy. I hope to God he's listening. We have a strong affiliate, don't we, guys, in San Diego? I know we're heard every day in San Diego, and it's live. Let me look it up. KFMB, great signal. It's heard all the way through L.A. And Mr. Hitman, send me a dream. If you are listening, Mr. X Hitman, and you want to call the Savage Nation, we'll give you priority, okay? Just tell them Harry sent you. 1-800-449-8255. Where is that? Texas, Georgia, PA. Why is it not up here? San Diego, sir, KFMB, 50,000 watts, 760 on a dial, live. Live when I'm on the air. That's a great signal. Blows right through L.A. And many of my listeners in L.A. Hear the show on the San Diego set. Now, that was good, Rob. Rob, have you read Trickle Up Poverty yet?
I have not.
I'm sending you a free copy for reminding me of that great show, because they may get it for the best of segments when I'm away. Thank you. Stay on the line. San Diego again. Jerry in San Diego. Thank you for calling. Jerry, what's on your mind?
The Oakland Memorial, the Oakland Cops Memorial, the bagpipes just, oh, boy, my eyes were filled with tears. I said, Savage is the greatest.
Oh, my God, when the five cops were killed by that bastard. I remember that show. It tore my guts out.
Yeah, tore mine out, too.
And you know, Jerry, do you know what the left-wing bastards did in Oakland? They held a celebration for the man who shot the cops. Do you know that that's how sick the Bay Area is?
It wouldn't surprise me.
I don't know how anyone puts a uniform on and controls themselves, to be honest with you. I think it's the toughest job on earth, whether it be a cop or a soldier. I just don't know, with a country like this, with the politicians and mayors and governors being as backstabbing as they are, I don't know how anyone does it anymore. Jerry, I'm sending you Trickle Up Poverty. In fact, everyone's a winner today. I am. Everyone who calls and gets on the air gets a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. But you have to be honest about one thing. You have to be honest and say if you don't have the book. If you don't, if you have it already, you know, say you, whatever. Hey, let me play another rock and roll song that I like. I like Sorry I Ran All the Way Home by the Impalas, because it's a car thing. You know. Could you play Sorry I Ran All the Way Home? Da, da, da,
and all the way home.
Not as good. Kill it. Don't think I'll ever play it again. It wasn't as good. Just play Sea of Love for 1 second. I want to try out Phil Phillips and the Twilights with Sea of Love. I kind of love that song. I think I did. Wasn't Al Pacino in that, with that woman with the false teeth who married the cosmetics guy and sued him and won $4 million? And now you never see her anymore, because the derriere has already approached the knees. She's already gone as well. She's only seen at charity events with leftover gowns. Used gowns from the, who is that? Well, don't mention her name. I'll get a lawsuit.
I love you.
Look what happened to Al Pacino. The guy was so handsome going back to, remember when he played the son? Look what happened to him. You know, there's only one actor that has really aged and maintained his charisma, because he made the jump, as I said to you before, from drama to comedy. There's only one guy that I know of, only one. It's the most difficult thing to do, which is like when you're a leading man and you get older, and to hold on to your audience. You can't play leading men when you're old. It's very hard to do. Only a few guys have done it. I mean, you go back a number of years, guys like Anthony Quinn could do it. They had charisma till the day they died. He didn't have to become a schmuck playing a comedy role. But having said that, Robert De Niro has made the transition from serious, tough guy to comedy. I mean, come on, some of the comedy moves were killers. Admittedly, he had really fabulous talent alongside him. And incredible writing, yes. But he does play the comedic roles, and he does a good job. He's also come back with some serious, like he just did one recently where he has four different children, and he's old, and he's traveling around the country looking for all of them, and one of them is a junkie. Very nicely done. He emotes. I don't like any of his politics, but that's irrelevant. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the Nazis didn't like Hitler's painting, but they liked his politics. I don't like Robert De Niro's liberalism, but I like his acting. So what are you going to do about it? So getting back to what I'm saying, there's only one guy who can make that transition that I know of, and that's Robert De Niro in that. But when you look at Sea of Love, look at Al Pacino, what happened to him. Do you remember when he appeared in GF1, how good he was, right? The powerful, right? And he shoots the guy in the restaurant through the head after they're scared in the bathroom. Then GF2 already with the Lake Tahoe house that was owned by Henry Kaiser, that they knocked down about a week after the movie was shot. That gorgeous house in the lake was gone right after that. That site is there now. I think it's four condominium houses, whatever. Beautiful house. God, I'd like to be up in Tahoe. There's one problem. I mean, we got rain. By the way, folks, I have some bad news for you if you live in the Midwest and the East Coast. Get ready for a bigger blizzard than you've had yet. Because as you well know, the weather patterns are west to east. You may not want to accept it, but it's true. We are being socked by rain. I woke up this morning. I have a little cottage that I keep that no one knows about on the bay. I have a number of residents. I move around like Yasser Arafat. No one knows where I'm going to be, when I'm going to be there, how long I'm going to be there, if I'm there. when I'm there, when I'm not there, if the lights are on, lights are off, who's in there, whether I'm there, whether I'm not. I went to this cottage last night. I woke up to a walloping southeaster, and we do get them out. They come out of the southeast, as a matter of fact. In this case, it came out of the north. It was a northeaster. Man, it was beautiful to see the waves smashing up against the house, well, the deck of the house, which is right on the bay. It was I happen to like rough weather. I'm not saying I want to move to Newfoundland or anything like that. I once lived in Marblehead, Massachusetts. My favorite winter of my life was, it brings back memories. It was 1975 or 76, and I had gone to Marblehead, Massachusetts for the winter to work in the Harvard Botanical Museum to do some research for a book I was writing called Plant a Tree. Many of you may remember the book. That's for those of you who think you're so green. Before you were even a glint in your grandfather's eye or your illegitimate I was already doing the green thing. But so I go there, and we rented a house in Marblehead, Massachusetts. And I'm going to tell you the exact house. It's amazing. There's a house in Marblehead, Massachusetts, beneath, on the street, sort of below the town hall, and it was known as the Anvil House, the Triangle House. It was built in Revolutionary War times. The reason I loved it was I like old houses, number one, that are still, they're built by shipwrights. They're unbelievable. Not a beam was cockeyed. The ceilings were lower because the men were like my size in those days from bad diet. But because I am an immigrant son, I actually have the body type of one of those men, which means I'll outlive those with perfect health who are 6'5". Because short men usually outlive tall men for reasons that you should understand little dogs do too.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
So President Obama joins Republicans and extends the Bush tax cuts for two more years and then increases social spending by billions of dollars, and they call this as progress. No one knows how they're going to pay for it. The law extended all the tax cuts put in place by former President G.W. Bush and added $56 billion to unemployment benefits for 2 million out-of-work Americans. That's very interesting because I don't know where the money's going to come from, but then since we have a man who has never worked for a living, never created a service or a product that actually required an audience, it means nothing to him. All he does is tell Geithner, the man who can't even pay his own mortgage, to run the presses around the clock. So why talk about it? You know, Lady Godiva could do a better job of running the country than Obama. Lady Godiva could do a better job than President Obama, but I doubt very much that Lady Godiva could even get to the primaries. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. And we're talking about cars, boats. We're talking about the best show that I did of the year, because this is going to be probably the last show I do for 2010. It is going to be the last show of 2010 because I'm off for the next 2 weeks for vacation and to recover from a very severe back injury. And here we are. So you better enjoy it while you can. Enjoy it. What is the best show I did of the year? Or what is the best caller? Or what is the best this? What is the best that? I don't think I'm going to go anywhere because of the back injury. I'm in agony most of the night. You know what works the best? I had physical therapy, meaning, you know, the body worker. And the best thing so far is Tiger Balm. It's better than pain medication, which I hate. I mean, admittedly, yes, pain medications is a nice excuse to use once or twice a year. But you don't want to use it or you wind up sounding like Rush Limbaugh. So I don't want to go there. That's number one. I drastically... did I tell you I went the other night to the big event I told you about with the tuxedo night? I didn't even report on it yet. And the strange thing is I enjoyed myself. I mean, to cut to the chase, remember how I was trepidatious? Why am I going? Why did I even make a donation to the museum? I had 10 seats. It's their gala for the year. It'll probably be all Nancy Pelosi supporters. Why am I going? I'm not this kind of guy. I'd rather stay home with a takeout dinner and watch television and the news. Turned out I enjoyed myself despite my worst fears. I had a great time. It was a live band. I felt like I was in a 1940s movie set. I got to tell you, it was unbelievably beautiful. The rich do have a better life than you do. I mean, I got to tell you, nobody looked unhappy there. I don't know how many. They looked very happy, most of them. They could care less about what Obama's doing because they're getting money from it. One way or the other, they're all benefiting in some way from the graft, from the grift, from the money running. But the band was like a big, big band, and everyone was dressed nice. The tables were set nice. And there's nothing else to report. A couple of people came over and said they love my show. No one came over and was nasty. You'd think in the crowd they'd know I was there. They would come over and say, we hate you. No one said I hate you. They probably, a lot of them knew who I was. I don't make an issue of it. Being in radio, they don't really know who you are, thank God. But some women came over. They were really happy. Oh, no, no, no. They said, like, I'm a groupie, they said about themselves. I said, well, that's nice. I almost wanted to say you're a little, you're a little too over the hill for that. But okay, whatever you feel good. The food was good. I violated my diet. I ate the steak. Everyone had a monster steak, a big filet mignon, whatever. So the next day I ate like a peasant. I ate gruel for 24 hours after that. You know, meat is interesting. There's probably less damage to your body from a good piece of meat than that garbage Chinese food and the Asian food that most people eat thinking it's healthy for them when you consider the garbage grease that they put into it. I mean, what are you people crazy? You just eat vegetables and fish, and what are they making it in? Some toxic saturated fat oil or some drippings from a chicken's behind. So you're eating the Chinese food. I mean, what's the garbage you're putting in your body in that regard? I mean, I eat the stuff myself, but really at this point I'm fed up with it, with the cutting back, and who knows where the shrimp are from and the calamari. This is a good piece of steak. The one thing I did that I really shouldn't admit on the air, but I guess I have to since it's the last show of 2010, and I feel almost like I'm in a confessional. I hate house wine wherever I go. I hate it. Usually, I don't care what the event is, black tie, pink tie, green tie, yellow tie, no tie. If you're going to a dinner, I don't care what the name of the Chardonnay is or the cab, it's usually garbage, and it's donated by someone who wants their name on the menu, right? We all know that. And you usually wind up with a migraine headache from the Chardonnay because it's too creamy and this and that. I don't drink that stuff, and I know they wouldn't serve a beer. Which is would have been my alternative. Actually, I was wrong. They did serve beer. Had I known it, I wouldn't have done what I did. I'm gonna admit it. If I'm gonna go out and I had eight guests at the table in addition to myself, I wanted them because it's once in a year, right? One night, one big night for me. I know how to live, so I did a few things that no one did there. I don't know how wealthy the other people were or weren't, but I guarantee you most of them were not that wealthy. A lot of them live on the proceeds of their grandfather, who was probably a gold miner and kept a house of ill repute in Reno. And most of them live on Pacific Heights, and they don't work, and they have no money. It's all diminishing returns, and they have to sell their house in order to even pay their taxes. But they are still put on the tuxedo, and I'm going off Pacific Heights. You know, at 49, the miners came, and 51, the whores, et cetera. You know how that one goes. Mark Twain said it, not me. So anyway, they all drink the house wine, and they seem to enjoy it, because when you mix house wine with a downer, it probably tastes very good. Or if you mix house wine with a Prozac, who knows if you even know what you're tasting. So I ordered six bottles of Dom Perignon because I happen to like champagne once a year, and I only like Dom. I can't drink the Cristal. I get sick from Cristal. It's garbage. It's too sugary. I know that a lot of drug dealers drink Cristal because it's more expensive, but it's puke. It's bad grape and bad wine. Dom is still actually a very good bottle. So anyway, we were pouring that, and I got to finish it. I'm not boasting. I'm just giving. Why did I like it? Because when you arrived, it was held in the court of the Rodin sculptures. I happen to be crazy about sculptures because I grew up cleaning bronzes. These were mainly marble sculptures by Rodin, and they're the real McCoy I got to tell you, sitting in that room, the architecture is beyond belief in the Palace of the Legion of Honor. It's my favorite museum in the world. It's a small museum, but it's almost as though you're in someone's private house, like a mansion. It always was. So I loved being in the Rodin room, and I loved kind of drinking a little too much right from the get-go next to, you know, you can't drink in museums. Well, I drank in that museum. I really enjoyed that. And then let's see, what else didn't I do or did do? Nothing. I danced and enjoyed it with a bum back, because after about a bottle of champagne, I basically couldn't feel anything. Admittedly, the next day I felt it. As a matter of fact, the next day it was worse, but what are you going to do? Like Jackie Gleason said, you know, I'm feeling no pain. I mean, remember that old Jackie Gleason show? I don't know how many of you are that old to remember him. He was so incredibly talented. But he would have a character would come out and say, I'm feeling no pain, you know, after a couple of drinks. I never knew what that meant as a kid. But as you get older, you realize what he meant by that. You know, as you get older, you know, most of us are in pain most of the time, psychological or this or that. So that was that. That was good. That was nice. And I vowed that from now on, I would try to find a venue somewhere in San Francisco that has kind of like a big band and music and a nice hotel and kind of step out of even my own aura of what I like and don't like and try to see if I enjoy that. Would you believe it? I'm willing to change. I'm willing to change. Oh, and there's one other bit of good news. I wore the same tuxedo that I bought 10 years ago for my daughter's wedding, and I still fit perfectly. Not 1 ounce change. Would you believe it? I don't mean like I'm wearing it and it's tight in the gut, okay? Or you know how you wear an older suit and you make believe it still fits, but everyone is laughing at you because you're behind. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, it fits perfectly, yeah. But it doesn't. Mine did. Many of us will try to get away with a suit that's great, that we spent a lot of money on, you know, but and it doesn't fit anymore. Like, we take it in, let it out, you know, weave the moth holes in it. I mean, it's just human nature. I didn't have to do anything with it. It fit perfectly. I was very proud that it still worked. And I just got to say one thing, which is very funny, because to me it was, well, can I mention his name? No, I won't. So my son-in-law says to me something nice. He's a very nice guy. He says to me, I only hope that my tuxedo fits me in 10 years the way yours fits you tonight after 10 years. I think that was very nice, don't you? And on that note, I'll take a quick break.
Savage.
Hope you're enjoying the show. Look, I tried politics at the beginning. I told you you're being sold down the river by your Congress, including Scott Brown and most of the Republicans. God forbid they pass the START treaty. We're going to be rendered impotent. But the fact is that I knew that if I shifted to, you know, topics like I'm doing, you'd like it better. And I mean, now you can't even call the show and get on the air. It's impossible. I knew what would happen. But very few people could pull this off. You have to have my knack. You have to have my knowledge of things in order to do this and have people listen. Anyone could try to talk about cars or where they went to dinner. After a while, you'd wind up sounding like Larry King. And I know that. I know that. But you actually like this kind of show once in a while, and since this is that time of year, I'm doing it. Robert in New York on WOR. Thank you. What's on your mind, Robert?
Michael, this is really the type of show that I like with you. Rambling, free thought, talking a little bit about this, a little bit about that, a little bit of politics, a little art, sailing, travels with Teddy, who knows what. But
because it's like a guy talking to a guy. It's like schmoozing in a cafe or a bar, isn't it? I mean, that's what it comes down to.
It's really enjoyable.
Well, I am a raconteur of the old school, because I have a lot that I know and I like to talk about, and I am a soothing person when I can put my mind at you know, to rest. So I'm let me send you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty to make your day even better. That's all. Even if you have it, take it. Give it away to a liberal on Christmas Eve. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'm asking you, what is your favorite show of the year? Because this is the last show I am doing for 2010. I'm on vacation / recovery for the next 2 weeks, hopefully with a lot of Tiger Balm and, I don't know, whatever works. But what is a doctor going to do? I'm not getting surgery. I will never do that. Please don't call with the remedies and the chiropractors. I had enough already with the backbreakers, with the digging the fingers into the neuromuscular skeleton. They leave you crippled. The back gets better for 2 minutes and every other joint hurts you. Then you wake up crippled altogether. Your back is a little better, but your legs hurt you, or your neck hurts you. At a certain point, look, chiropractic has its benefits, but you could have your neck cracked, not me. Leave me out of it. I'll use the Tiger Balm. I'll use the medication. I'll go to the back doctor again. We'll see how it works out. Yeah, it's stress. It's also related to stress. And incidentally, please pay careful attention to what I'm about to tell you. Although I will be off the air, would you please look at michaelsavage.com every day next week? There will be a very big...
Kerouac, and he was talking about bringing that woman to the institution, and you tied it in with your brother. I thought that it was a very powerful moment, and it really revealed a lot about you that I hadn't really... Even though I've been listening to you for 10 years.
Oh, yeah, that was really touching. That was Henry Miller. And it was about Henry Miller writing about take his relatives. He had to take the crazy aunt to the madhouse, Gates, and how she did not know where she was going, and it killed him. It ripped his guts out. That one. It was unbelievable. That's unbelievable. It wasn't me. It was Henry Miller reading from his own book, Black Spring.
Yes, I mean, that's right. It was Henry Miller. I am sorry. But you tied it in with your brother, your silent brother that you spoke about in your book.
Yep. Yeah. Well, believe me, anyone who's had a handicapped brother or a child understands what it does to people because you don't know what to do for them. And no matter what's done, you still feel like you failed them somehow, you know, that you didn't protect them or this and that. So that's the life, you know. Everyone lives with what they live, but they're the ones who really suffer, not you. It's just like try going to their grave in the winter and looking at their tomb in the snow. You really want to have a nice moment. Anyway, thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Indiana. Scott, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. Yeah, I work for Cummins Diesel and on exhaust system design. So I started laughing because I think my boss actually worked on the engine and the boat that you had that had the exhaust problems.
Oh, well, yeah, the flange was not attached properly in Malaysia when it was constructed, and that's why the exhaust broke off from the engine slightly and was leaking. I think that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
But the engines themselves, they started every time I turned them on for 8 years. It's the same, thank God, with my big 1,000-horsepower cats right now. It's something awesome to take cold engines and hit a start button and see these things turn over. There's one feature on these engines that I have that I didn't have on the other boat. You know what that is? Engine oil warmers. They're amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, you know what they are, right? Little electric warmers that are built into the engine, little coils.
Yeah, to make the oil flow better when it's cold.
Yeah, because when you start a cold engine, I don't care what it's, a car or a boat, obviously, cold oil is going to be not as viscous as as hot oil, and you're going to get some wear on your piston rings. I'm sure of that, right? I mean, when you start her up with cold oil, and so you want your oil as warm as you know, like almost up to operating speed before you even turn that engine over.
Right. And by the way,
thank you. Yeah, so go on, please finish.
Turbocharger.
Yeah, turbo. How does a turbo differ from a supercharger?
A supercharger takes power from the crankshaft, and that spins a compressor, which compresses the air. But a turbocharger takes the exhaust stream, and that's what spins the compressor.
Oh, it blows the hot air back in a compressed fashion into the engine.
Or, yeah, the exhaust
stream. Oh, wow, that's beautiful. Of course, it's more efficient to use a turbo, right?
Yeah, and pretty much all diesel engines use turbos.
Yeah, beautiful. Thanks for helping with that. Sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. I hope it gives you as much pleasure as the turbocharger on my Caterpillar diesels gives me. I didn't know what a turbocharger was.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We have a new ice age approaching, and back in 1974, the German publication Der Spiegel said that we had a new ice age approaching, and that the odds that we would have a warming future would be at best 1 in 10,000, and they were right. I mean, we haven't yet had a new ice age, but the fact of the matter is we're into a cold phase rather than a hot phase. I know Al Gore's mind is distorted, and he has everything off by 180 degrees. He had it almost right. He's just off by about 50%, that's all. It's like a whoops. Oh, we meant global cooling, but we said global warming, so therefore we're going to shift everything now. Look out, we're having global cooling. Keep sending the money, and I have a new form for you to fill out to make sure you can contribute to the Global Cooling Foundation. So there we are. Cold, cold, cold. The biggest blizzard hitting England in 100 years right now. But, of course, you won't read that in the UN of the Protocols of the United Nations. You won't read any of that. And you don't know that the ocean temperature in the North Atlantic dropped over the last 20 years, way back when, from 12 degrees to 11.5 degrees centigrade. You didn't know that back in 1960, the Arctic ice was growing at an alarming rate. And the ice pack and glacier-covered area of the Northern Hemisphere grew by about 12% at the Arctic Circle. The coldest temperatures in 200 years were recorded back in 1960. You don't know any of that. 1970, rather. Because, again, the propaganda is complete. Marijuana is good for you. Global warming is real. Diversity is grand. Immigrants all come here to work. The practitioners of the religion of peace have nothing to do with the terrorism anywhere on Earth. All Christians should be put in prison until proven innocent. Because your mind has been so brainwashed, you actually don't know what's what. But I do. Luckily, I'm an older man who has not yet had my brain washed. Nor do I think it ever will be washed by these vermin. And so, therefore, you listen to the show hanging on my every word, because I'm usually right. When I'm occasionally off or wrong, I'll admit it. When has Al Gore last admitted he was wrong about anything? When has Obama admitted he's wrong about anything? When has Nancy Pelosi ever said she was wrong? When has Harry Reid admitted he was wrong? The answer is no. Demagogues and liars will never admit they were wrong. In fact, psychopaths, when they are found to be wrong, usually become violent. A wise man will admit that he's fallible, and a wise man will admit that maybe he made a mistake, and he corrects himself because he doesn't take it personally. A psychopath digs his heels in and usually commits Harry Carey. That's all. What do you want to talk about? Cars now, something pleasant like tuberculosis on the uptick as a result of illegal immigration. Cholera maybe entering San Diego as a result of immigration. What else is in the news? Boats, turbochargers, UN plans, internet regulation. How can I wrap my way around that? I don't get that part of it. How can I wrap my head around internet regulation? I don't understand that. But while we're talking about this, I mean, the Senate's going to do it again. Just what Pelosi did with the Obamacare. Just what Big Chin Pelosi did with Obamacare. They're going to jam through the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and amnesty for illegals over the weekend unless you stop them. And now you say, well, what can I do? Nothing, because you don't live in a participatory democracy. That's the absolute truth. You've had your fun. You went to the polls in November, and that was your fun. That was what you're allowed. Every 2 years, you're allowed to have your fun and think that you have some impact upon these thieves and criminals. But you don't. You change the window dressing. So now you went from the Democrats crowing with hammers, oversized hammers, to Republicans in pink ties who are crying. But they're still raping us. That's all. What's the difference? You think they really know what's in the Star Treaty? You think they care if Obama gives away national security? What do they care? What do they care? As long as they can build a bridge to nowhere, you know what I mean, in their own district. As long as they can get subsidies for American Samoa tuna fisheries and not pay any taxes on it, what do they care? All that matters, it's all about the dollar. You mean nothing to them. You do not live in a participatory democracy. I don't know how long it's been since America has been considered a participatory democracy. I don't know if it ever was one. But we certainly had the semblance of a participatory democracy. Right now, we have the remnants of it with talk radio and the internet. We think we're free. We're not free. They do what they want anyway. You put in Scott Brown, everyone celebrates. You wake up, and there he is voting with Olympia Snow. That's all. You talk about a snow job. But old Mike wasn't fooled. Couldn't fool me. I've been around too long, and I knew he was a politician. I knew he'd do what was expedient for him within his own community. Whoever smeared him off with enough money with contributions, he would do. That's all. What, do you have to be a genius to figure it out? What, do you think he was J.C.? Scott Brown already turning in. You remember when they were, what buzz. He's going to save us. He's going to be. So I'd rather play some rock and roll. Does anyone know what song I'm looking for? The staff has been looking for it. The lyrics are The Heat Cooled Down, The Motor Cooled Down. What is that song? I can't remember it. While you're calling in with the name of that song, Doug, see if anyone knows what the lyrics come from. Heat Cooled Down, The Motor Cooled Down. I don't know what the song is. Play Wake Up Little Susie by the Everly Brothers while they're calling on that one so I can make notes on my legal brief.
Wake up, little Susie, wake up.
Date anyone named Susie? I never did. It's funny how that works. Guys tend to date people by similar names. That's a strange thing. No one's ever analyzed that. It's like you look back on a guy's life, like almost every girlfriend you had and then your wife, they were within a certain range of the same initial, the same first. I made that up on this. It's not true. Looking back, I don't remember, truthfully. I mean, the first woman I ever fell in love with was I was 5 years old. I remember going to the movies in the Bronx somewhere, the Lowy's, whatever. I don't know. It was always like a palace. And it was the movie called She Wore a Yellow Ribbon. I don't know who it was who was in it. And I was a little kid, 5 years old, and it was this woman on a stagecoach with a yellow ribbon on her neck, and she was whipping horses. Yeah, giddy up, giddy up. I don't know. I went home excited I didn't know what I was feeling. I couldn't sleep all night. My poor little five-year-old heart pounded all night, and all I saw all night was a woman with dark hair with a yellow bandana whipping horses going around the pass. I have no idea who she even was. I don't know who the actress was. I'm sure she's in the next world already. But that was the first. I don't even know her name. Does anyone know who that actor? That's so long ago, how things work. What's the song called, Doug? Maybelline. Is it Chuck Berry? Okay, come on, play it.
The heat went down, that's when I heard that highway sound. Cadillac setting like a tornado, 110 and a half a mile ahead. Cadillac looking like it's setting still, and I caught Maybelline at the top of the hill. Maybelline, why can't you be true?
Kelly Summer can still sing like this. Go ahead. With all the drugs you've taken, with all of your psychedelic drugs, tell me you can still sing this way. No one can. God, he was incredible, Chuck Berry, was he not? What would Chuck Berry say about radical Islam? I wonder what the old rock and rollers would say about America getting on its hands and knees, being afraid of people who are threatening to blow them up at every turn, blowing up Christmas trees, I'm going to blow up your supermarket, I'm going to blow up your school, and we sit here like sissies shaking in our boots. What a country we become. Take a look at it. Take a look at the Department of Homeland Security. Take a look at the invisible leaders of the military. Take a look at it. The guys who are really in the military fighting, you never hear from. But the fakers up there looking for their contracting deal, they're sitting in the Pentagon seeing how they could sell the troops out and give them a court-martial. Ask these guys, the guys like Chuck Berry and the guys, the crackers from the South, ask them what they think about the country. You'll know what America really is. I'm telling you, for me, it's just going to happen spontaneously. This cannot go on. You cannot have people doing this to this country forever with a country armed to the teeth like this. It's not going to last. It will not go on because the country is dying. The people are dying. They see what's being done to their children and their women and the humiliation every day catering to these throwbacks sitting here on welfare and spitting in our faces. This cannot and will not go on. It will not go on in Europe either. I can guarantee you those bums are going to be... Something's going to happen there. I told you only the soccer thugs can save England. You see, the soccer thugs that have been debased by the British media, the big burly Englishmen with crosses that have been tattooed on their backs and faces, those guys who look like they're mastodons, who are always pushed aside like they're the throwbacks, they are actually the descendants of the English who conquered the world. And the people who are actually running England are the cowards and the craven thieves who have stabbed England in the back. And I'm telling you, as I stand there, there's going to be something that breaks in Europe. I don't know where. And it's going to happen very soon. It's going to happen without anyone seeing it coming. And they're going to reassert and they're going to take their country back. And they will kick the immigrants out. As sure as I'm standing here, that's liable to happen. You don't think it's possible. It will happen. There's only so much a nation can and will take. It will happen here as well. It will happen here. We cannot take these the gobblers anymore. There's only so much we can take of the compromisers and the gobblers. There's only so much we can take of Republicans in pink ties who are crying every other day and compromising with the liberals while laughing all the way to the bank. It cannot go on. At some point, the country will react. It has not yet reacted. You haven't seen it. Oh, they call everyone who is against the libs reactionary. What they don't know is that the liberal is actually the reactionary against the country itself. See, it's an interesting use of terms. The real reactionaries are the super liberals who are reacting against the freedoms of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. They are the true reactionaries. And one day, I don't know whether I'll see it, I hope I do, there will be a reaction in this country to the reactionaries, and something's going to happen. It's going to come out of nowhere. No matter what the government has done, will do, try to control, suppress, put them in court, take away their farms, sue them, do this, sue that one, sue this one, take away his farm, put him in jail, do this, do that. Eventually, I'm telling you, enough lone wolves will appear, like the radical Muslims that we're fearing right now. We're all told, oh, they have no country, we don't know where they're from, we don't know who the enemy is, they're all lone wolves, there's no organization. Trust me, the country has millions of lone wolves too. And nobody has seen them stand up and say, you know what? You may not see me again, but that's the end of the road. I'm not taking this anymore. I can't take it. I'm not going to live like this. I wasn't born into a nation to see it die in front of my eyes, to see it sold down the river by these vermin. It will happen. And I don't know when. I don't know how. I don't know who's going to lead it. It will happen. That's what I see. That's my vision. So I went to the mountaintop and I had a dream and I saw that happening. I see Europe being saved. I was asked this yesterday by my fill-in, can it be saved? I had a dream. I saw it last night. Europe will react and those throwbacks will be thrown out of that country. You're going to see things that you can't believe happening. Oh, the press will turn against them, as sure as I'm standing here. They'll call them every name under the sun because they're all afraid of the throwbacks on welfare. You have no idea what the stats are. You don't have any idea how many of these people are living on welfare, how many of them are having children. You have no idea. You haven't any idea what's going on in Europe or America because you've been blinded by the vermin in the media who keep you dancing and jumping around with the Hollywood Report every other day. Another idiot, degenerate, junkie girl falls down and her skirt falls over her head and they hold her up as a role model. She's bigger than Betsy Ross all of a sudden and she went to rehab and that's supposed to be interesting to me. No wonder Larry King went out of business. That stupid old man with false teeth. I'll stop here. I'll be back.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
This, of course, is Fats Domino, but the song is dedicated to Vladimir Putin. Now you say, wait a minute. Why would you dedicate Blueberry Hill by Fats Domino to Vladimir Putin? Because we have a real treat for you, ladies and gentlemen. We have Vladimir Putin singing Blueberry Hill at a charity event in Russia. Listen.
On Blueberry Hill.
Okay, well, as I say, different strokes for different folks. You have to ask yourself, why would Vladimir Putin like Blueberry Hill by Fats? How could that make it over into Russia? Well, because blueberries are in Russia. I had a Russian grandmother who used to pick blueberries. That's true. Now I understand it. Everyone loves blue. I don't know anyone who doesn't like blueberries. Of all the foods on earth, when you think about it, some idiot allergic to peanuts. You can't have a peanut in a plane because a sicko tells you they're allergic. You can't have a peanut in a plane. Yeah, I could see they're allergic to, but you're not allowed to have a peanut in an airplane because they're liable to sue the airline because you had a peanut. This is all mind control. And we're sitting there like schmucks. I won't have my peanut because some idiot in the back is going to sue the airline. So the answer is throw them off the airplane. They don't fly on an airline without peanuts. How about having a peanut-free flight once a year to Siberia if you don't like it? So anyway, I don't know of anyone who's allergic. They're allergic to everything. Fish, shrimp, peanuts, asparagus, you name the food. Everyone has something. I need this. I got a touch of that. I have a no dairy. No. The latest trend is the everyone is into the, I forget already, the latest thing. They think they discovered something. I forget, something free, gluten free. Now it's gluten free. They all think that they're going to become Superman. Oh, yeah. I found out my whole problem all my life, the reason why I was a wimp, and is because I had gluten. Now I'm feeling like Superman. Suddenly they're cured. Unbelievable. It's all fads. It's all fads. It's unbelievable. It doesn't mean that certain diets aren't superior for certain people. The one food no one's allergic to that I know is blueberries. And that explains why Putin would sing Blueberry Hill. Because in Russia, they like blueberries as well. And I told you it's very good for your eyes a couple of weeks ago. I remember that you bring back memories, you know, reminiscences of blueberries past. When I was a little kid, to this day, you want to have a nice memory now in the winter? To this day, I can remember walking around in the low hills of the Catskill Mountains with other little kids and my grandmother, who didn't speak a word of English, by the way. She had a babushka on her head. Lovely woman, thin. She looked like an American Indian. Let me put it to you that way. She was a very handsome woman. She wasn't like one of the fat Ukrainian types. She was thin and lean, very elegant, very aristocratic. She'd pick blueberries with us. I could remember to this day the sound of those big blueberries as they were thrown into the big aluminum pot. As we, you know, kids, you carry the pots from the kitchen, and when it made a certain sound, not like a squish, because it like pinged when it went in there. And as they built up, you know you were going to go back to your little cottage and eat those blueberries. Wow. Remembrances of blueberries past. So that's why Putin can love a blueberry as much as... Maybe there's hope for the world. Maybe we can have the famous blueberry conference. Maybe I, Michael Savage, can propose before the UN that we have a blueberry conference where men of all countries come together and eat blueberries and talk about world issues. I wonder if Obama would go to that, given his background, because blueberries do not grow in Indonesia. Blueberries do not grow in Kenya, so far as I know. I am not certain. I think there is a variety of a small blueberry that I saw in my years in Hawaii, so I don't know if he'll be able to relate to it, because his wife was only proud of being an American once, and that was when she became First Lady. So I don't really know whether Obama would relate to the blueberry as well as I would, or Fats Domino, or Vladimir Putin. But there's always there's always hope. So my friend old Jack sends me an email, says the woman who appeared and she wore a yellow ribbon, who you fell in love with when you were five, her name was Joanne Drew. She lived from 1922 to 1996. That was a short life. I guess Harry B. Mayer had his way with her a little too many times. I don't really know. Why would she die so young? Oh, in those days, they were drugged up, too. Are you kidding? You think that started yesterday? Yeah, right. You ever see these movies in the 30s, how beautiful some of those women were? How do you think they got their jobs? Given the people who were running the movie industry then. Basically, there were guys who were in the fish business or the garment center, went out west and went into the movie business. Yeah, they picked them because they were beautiful and they were very talented. I understand, right. Okay, and they didn't put them on smackaroo or whatever. They needed to keep them subdued. But anyway, that's one man's opinion. I just look at the world through a jaundiced set of eyes. What can I tell you? So here we are. We're approaching the last 46 seconds of this hour of the Savage Nation, which is the last day of the last show of the year 2010 that I know of, the last minutes of the last of the second hour of the whatever. And I'm asking you again, and if you are a donor to the Savage Legal Fund, you will be getting a letter, an emergency appeal coming next week to help me with my astonishing legal fees and what I am fighting for, which is my veritable life. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. The website is michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Ooh, wow, ooh.
headlines, and they're pretty strong. I'm going to start with michaelsavage.com, and I'm going to go from the bottom and work my way up. Another soldier fights for his freedom. Please help. See the case of Private First Class David W. Lawrence, who was accused of premeditated murder for the alleged shooting of a senior Taliban commander, if you can believe it. Here's a soldier who did his job. He's now facing life in prison or the death penalty. I sent him $10,000. Okay, you can send him some money, too, to help him. From Reuters, is free Iraq becoming a more Islamic state? Well, of course. Isn't that what Bush's war was all about? To create a greater Iran, a greater Shiite entity? After all, Bush is a genius. Just ask Wallbanger. Here's one from the London Daily Mail. An Austrian in England has been charged, and fined after a Muslim neighbor complained that his yodeling mocked the call to prayer. You heard me. Yodeling. All he did was yodel. He was charged with the arcane offenses of disparagement of religious symbols, usually reserved for neo-Nazis who desecrate Jewish graves, because he yodeled. They claim it interrupts their call to prayer. He's 63 years old. Muslim neighbor claimed his yodeling mocked the call to prayer. A judge decided Helmut Gries, age 63, was ridiculing their beliefs and fined him nearly 700 pounds. Rather than face a protracted court case with all its legal costs, Gries agreed to pay. The court heard how the Muslim family regarded Gries as a grumpy old man and came to view his open-air versions of the Alpine chanting as racist asides aimed at them. Austrian media reported how the pensioner was accused in the court of trying to mock and imitate the call of the muezzin. They alleged that he always began his yodeling just as they knelt down to pray to Mecca. He said, "It was not my intention to imitate or insult them. I simply started to yodel a few tunes because I was in such a good mood," he told Austria's Krone newspaper. Now, for those dummies amongst you who don't know it, the yodel is a song sung with an extended note which rapidly and repeatedly changes in pitch and makes a high-low, high-low sound. It was developed in the Central Alps as a method of communication between mountaineers or between villages. The yodel later became part of the region's traditional lore and musical expression. But, according to a so-called judge in the Austrian city of Graz, they said that his yodeling actually mocked his neighbor's religion. This is how far it has gone. The police were called, and it was he who was issued with a summons as tempers got heated. This is what's going on. This is a disgrace of human rights. This is all what happens as a result of the insanity of liberalism. It's coming to a neighborhood near you. As sure as I'm standing here, one day someone will claim that you're raising the American flag in your backyard is an insult to Islam. Read about it on michaelsavage.com. I'm sure it won't make it to the New York Times or Fox News. This report. Now to the audio on the Savage Nation. You know, Barack Obama is losing his deputies in the second year of his presidency, with Harry Reid, the Democratic Majority Leader in the Senate, now accusing the White House of trying to steal power. Can you believe this?
Everyone should understand this earmark issue is simply a way for the executive branch of government to steal power we've been granted in our Constitution. We have a constitutional duty to do congressionally directed spending. And I don't want to give up that responsibility. I can't understand why some of my more conservative members here want to give up their power. I don't understand that.
This is all while a self-righteous Harry Reid of Nevada attacked Republicans, calling them sanctimonious.
As a Christian, no one has to remind me of the importance of Christmas for all of the Christian faith, all their families all across America. I don't think any of us, I don't need to hear the sanctimonious lectures of Senator Kyle DeMint to remind me of what Christmas means. My question, Madam President, is where were their concerns about Christmas as they had filibuster after filibuster on major piece of legislation during this entire Congress?
This is all happening while the President's deputy, Joe Biden, was talking down to Senate Republicans because they supposedly dragged their feet on the Star Treaty, which, as you well know, the Star Treaty, perhaps the most dangerous treaty in the history of the United States of America.
There's too much at stake for America's national security. And don't tell me about Christmas. I understand Christmas. I have been a senator for a long time. I've been there many years where we go right up to Christmas. There's 10 days between now and Christmas. I hope I don't get in the way of your Christmas shopping, but this is the nation's business. This is a national security's at stake. Act. Act.
I'm in constant doubt about the existence of God and what he wants of me, to be frank with you. I'm plagued by doubts about the existence of God and about whether God really cares or whether I'm alone in the universe or there really is, you know, somebody up there who likes me, truthfully. I've had events in my own life which indicate there is something other than me and something other than events around me that need explanation for which there are no explanations. So therefore, I, at a certain point, have to go by the way of belief. I know it, you come to belief in this way, it's not a wholehearted belief, but that's the way it is with me. Maybe you hear it in my voice, maybe you hear it, you don't hear it at all, you hear a guy who's sure of himself. But when it comes to the God thing, I'm telling you the truth, some days I just don't know because I can't understand the suffering that he permits. I can't understand the children born with diseases. I can't understand so many things that happen. And then on the other hand, I know miracles exist, and whether they're just chance occurrences. As a scientist by training, I certainly understand those who are skeptical of this whole God concept, and so therefore I go back and forth myself. All right, I'll be right back.
Savage.
Primetime TV objectifies and fetishizes underage girls. No kidding. Take a look at who runs Primetime TV. Another story from MichaelSavage.com. McDonald's is sued for marketing Happy Meals to children. It says that the toys circumvent parental control and teach children unhealthy eating habits. Judge rules water cutbacks based on junk science. Very interesting. Can't have that. Let's see what else. Drug dealer axed to death for killing a girl in Old London. Police believe Daniel McGinty was hunted down by friends of overdose victim Carla Deary, age 18, who then axed him to death. Majority of teens live in rejection families. Well, whatever that means, I have no idea what that means. Stuxnet, that's a virus, saves Israel trouble of Iran strike. It appears the Stuxnet computer virus may have done more harm to Iran's nuclear program than even the most savage of airstrikes could have done. One for Israel, score one for Israel and zero for the Iranians, I hope. Now let's go to the top of MichaelSavage.com. For victory for the Tea Party, but a long road remains ahead. No kidding. Congress passes sweeping tax bill. No kidding. The judge has ruled that the book Trickle Up Poverty is 100% correct and that Obamacare is unconstitutional. I was ahead of my time by months. Many of you know this. Believe it or not, I was ahead of the curve with trickle-up poverty. And speaking of being ahead of the curve, who was in the radio who warned you not to salute Scott Brown in Massachusetts after he won that seat in the old Kennedy district? Who told you that he's probably going to be a liberal? Who told you he was going to vote with liberals? Who told you he was a fake conservative? Who told you not to worship him? Me. We learned yesterday that Scott Brown backs the repeal of the military's gay ban. Brown has now joined the liberals to repeal the don't ask, don't tell rule in the military. He's given them the vote threshold that they need. 1-800-449-8255, MichaelSavage.com. Why is Michael Savage not in the WikiLeaks cables thus far? Why is that? Why is there no record of Michael Savage being banned in the WikiLeaks cables? Asks Mr. Savage himself, who has waged a 19-month battle to get his name off the list without any help from anybody in the radio industry. UK-based man in worldwide al-Qaeda attack plot. U.S. intelligence reports doubt Afghan war is a success. Bandits who prey on illegals gunned down Border Patrol agent. They killed one yesterday. You wouldn't read about that. The Congress isn't interested in Border Patrol agents. 1-800-449-8255. You can read all about this on MichaelSavage.com. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan from what's going on in the White House, but with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE.
The little old lady from Pasadena.
Go, Manny, go, Manny, go, Manny, go.
Has a pretty little flower bed of white gardenia.
Go, Manny, go, Manny, go, Manny, go.
But parked in a rickety old garage is a brand new shiny red superstar.
As a kid, in Dad's car, the DeSoto, the old Cadillacs, driving over the Williamsburg Bridge, which was right over the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Remember, I go back away a while in time. So how old could I have been? I don't know, but it was post-World War II, and the Brooklyn Navy Yard was bustling. Today, they produce pornography and websites in that area. The Silver Cup Baking Factory doesn't make bread. Now they make pornographic movies with actors from the Lower East Side who are allegedly famous. In my day, they actually made bread and they actually repaired ships. Today, they make pornography and repair nothing. They can't even repair a broken heart. But the fact is, we go over the Williamsburg Bridge in the car, and they had those little the grates. It always scared me. The car would make that sound, that rumbling sound. I hated it. Kids are weird. Like, the kid looks down between the cracks of the roadway and sees the water, and he's sure the car is going to fall in. And you look at your father, you think he's Superman because he doesn't care. He doesn't even look. Means nothing. I mean, he doesn't even think about it. Why should he? No car has ever fallen through the roadway. kids are like on LSD. Kids naturally are on psychedelics because they see everything in a distorted manner. When you think about it, a kid sees things the way paranoiacs see things on LSD or mescaline. So the kid looks down through the roadway, the metal roadway, and he sees the water on below him. He figures the car could fall into the water, and he's in a state of fear. Father just drives ahead in the undershirt to go to another horrible day at work, hoping to God someone buys something so they have food on the table. Anyway, below us was the Brooklyn Navy Yard. To the right was the Domino. I used to love the Domino Sugar Company because that's where I first got my love of the sea and of the tropics. I would say, you know, kids, so I'd see like, these ships unloading sugar to the Domino sugar plant underneath that bridge. And I imagine it, like, I have such an imagination, you have no idea. I saw the ship coming and I saw the whole transit. I saw the sugar cane being grown, the happy natives with the machetes, the bales being lifted up, the cranes on the waterfront, Marlon Brando, Carl Malden, axes, hair, you know, meat hooks, the sugar being unloaded down into Domino, the sugar being made and having the grinding, whatever. And on the left side, there was the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And there were aircraft carriers with big numerals on them and battleships and cruisers and destroyers bustling in to be repaired by men who had welding irons in their hand, who knew how to fix ships. Yeah, I've got mail. You hear? That's what I have today. You hear my in the background what I have today? That's what I have today. You've got mail. Everyone runs around with the oracle in their hand, looking underneath the table. They go to dinner. They don't talk to each other. A whole family goes to dinner. Four people, a man, a woman, two children, aged 12 and 13. And within 3 minutes, the father's looking under the table at his BlackBerry, answering emails. The mother's answering emails under the table. The son is playing a video game under the table. The daughter is on Facebook finding out what pimple cream her friend is using. And nobody talks to anybody anymore. No wonder no one could fix a ship. Or make any sugar. Or make any bread. I don't want to just complain about things, truthfully. But in those days, the Brooklyn Navy Yard actually repaired ships. Interestingly enough, Henry Miller grew up in the Brooklyn Navy Yard area. You got to read some of his stuff from that period. A Black Spring was in very interesting books about that era. Very fascinating. All right, how about some more rock and roll?
If you see her on the street, don't try.
So I met a demon. There's my dog again. Teddy, stop it. Teddy just saw the angel or the demon. I don't know which. Teddy, get back in the studio. See, they see and hear things we don't see and hear. That's why I like him at night in the house. I like him with Mr. Smith and Mr. Wesson and Teddy. It makes for a complete circle in the bedroom. I sleep with Smith, Wesson, and Teddy. But here we are, watching the world go by. It gets worse by the day. Every day gets worse, from hope and change to dope and strange, in only 18 months. All right.
Or the rock and roll that we have.
Oh, Donna. Mm-hmm.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The question of Obama's religious beliefs keeps coming up. And these questions are not just coming from the Republican right. Recently, the Bipartisan Congressional Prayer Caucus sent the president a letter asking him to stop omitting the words "our creator" in the speeches that he gives. He doesn't say "our creator." Joining us now is Dr. Grace Vuto from the Edmund Burke Institute. Dr. Grace, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Why is the Congressional Prayer Caucus particularly upset at the president?
Well, Michael, you know, it looks like President Obama has stepped into another controversy, even at Christmas time. He recently lit the national Christmas tree, and he made a point of addressing the fact that he is a Christian. He did so because the Congressional Prayer Caucus recently sent him a letter saying, "We have noticed that repeatedly in your public pronouncements, you are deliberately misrepresenting America's Christian heritage." For example, in a speech that he delivered in Indonesia, he mistakenly said that the national motto is "E Pluribus Unum" instead of "In God We Trust." And the Congressional Prayer Caucus said, "Hey, President Obama, this is a huge error. You are misrepresenting what this nation stands for." In addition, we've noticed that whenever you mention the Declaration of Independence, you deliberately omit the words that the individuals are given their rights, that these are endowed by, quote-unquote, our Creator. So Obama has deliberately not used the words God, not used the words our Creator. And the Congressional Prayer Caucus is calling him to task, asking him to step up to the plate and speak like the Christian president that he claimed he was going to be.
What do you really think his religion is? Is he a Christian? Is he a Muslim? Is he an atheist?
Well, you know, the president has been dogged by these persistent claims that he is a Muslim. This is obviously false. He is not a Muslim. He has said repeatedly that he is a Christian. The problem is that one in five Americans today, in a recent poll, still believe that he is a Muslim. So he really does have a major problem in terms of how he is perceived. Why do these rumors persist? In part, it is because he appears to be ashamed of his own Christianity. He appears to be ashamed of the Christian roots of this nation. And unless he is more forceful in presenting himself as a Christian leader, these rumors are going to persist. Even Barbara Walters had to ask him in a recent interview, "Mr. Obama, why do you think the nation still sees you as a Muslim, or some people still do, or that these rumors still persist?" And he said that it was due basically to the Internet. The Internet is fueling this. But he ought to look at his own behavior. When the president of this country misrepresents the Declaration of Independence by omitting the words "our Creator," it raises eyebrows. So if he wants the rumors to stop, he's got to present himself in line with the Christian heritage of this country.
Is this kind of behavior of his a pattern?
Yes, and that's exactly right. It's not just one isolated incident. If it was, you know, an error, an omission, for example, if he'd forgotten one time to reference our Creator in addressing the rights that stem to us from the Declaration of Independence, that could be forgiven. But we've seen a long-standing pattern. Since he has become president, he has downplayed his Christianity. For the first 9 months of his presidency, he did not attend a church. He attended only one time, and the press went into a frenzy about it, asking him about, you know, whether or not he had found a church to attend regularly since he left Trinity United in Chicago. And this is one example of the many ways in which, if he were truly a devoted and practicing Christian, it would be more visible and obvious to the public. So it's not just one incident, it's following a long-standing pattern. On top of which, it's not just that he downplays the Christian part, it's that he gives a lot of emphasis to Muslim issues, more so than any other previous president. He famously said in an interview in the New York Times that the Muslim call to prayer is one of the prettiest sounds on earth. Those are very, very, very strong words, and it seems to the public that when he speaks about Muslims, he speaks with a great deal more affinity, cultural affinity, and a great deal more sympathy and reverence than he seems to speak on issues regarding Christianity and America's Christian heritage.
But why is the religion of the president important to begin with?
I have to really emphasize this. There has been no sitting president in American history whose religion has been questioned as much and as often as this current president. He obviously has a major problem. Why is it so important to America at large, not just to the Savage Nation, but to America at large, is because, very simply, this nation was founded on Christian principles, and those must be upheld visibly, publicly, openly, often by the person that holds the highest office in the land. Every president has bowed to this basic fact. And I have to say, if we go back to what our founding fathers wanted, they insisted over and over again that the American people must remain wedded to organized religion, that this would be key to upholding the morality of the people on the whole, that this is essential to civic virtue, and that without this we would not be able to maintain our free institutions.
Well, what's changed now?
What's changed now is that we have a president that doesn't seem to understand American history, number one. Number two, he seems to be giving a great deal more credence to other cultures than our own. That's another major problem. And also, he seems to be bowing to the liberal notion that we have to adhere to a very, very strict separation of church and state, not just in legal matters, which everybody would agree is essential, but also in public pronouncements. Now, the founding fathers, they very much feared an establishment religion, you know, that there is only one religion for the nation, but they didn't fear religion itself. They thought religion itself was a great thing, and they thought that if you separate church and state, that's a really, really good way of preserving the liberties of the people to practice religion vigorously. That's what they wanted. That's what they envisioned. This president seems to be so concerned about transgressing the liberal holy grail of the separation of church and state that he doesn't really know what to say or what to do when it comes to anything regarding Christianity and public leadership. He should simply recognize that as the president of a originally Christian nation, he must uphold Christianity in his public pronouncements, that this is good for the country. This is, in fact, what many of the people who elected him thought he was going to do. And if you look at what George Washington and John Adams said, they precisely warned the public not to drift away from organized religion, because they said without this, eventually we would lose our civic virtue and we would lose the ability to uphold the liberties that we so cherish.
Well, isn't Obama just towing the party line on this position?
I think that the president essentially appears to have misrepresented himself. In the 2008 campaign, what was very fresh about him, you know, fresh and new and breathtaking, was his ability to appear to uphold our American ideals as well as our Christian ideals. Remember that that's one of the ways that he distinguished himself even very starkly from Hillary. This was a man who wasn't afraid to discuss matters of faith openly and often with a great deal of conviction. This was a man, too, that called upon the great American ideals over and over again. Yet the moment that he has become president, it seems that he's been captured by the ideology of the liberals, which have essentially made him almost a neutron in the way that he conducts himself when it comes to issues of morality. He seems afraid, timid. He doesn't know what to do or say, possibly for fear of offending the public opinion of those who read the New York Times. In reality, he should be concerned about what the majority of Americans think and want him to do. We want a president that represents the best of the nation's history. We want a president that calls upon us to uphold our Christian faith and to uphold the values that come from that faith. And we want a Christian president that essentially upholds everything that has been good in American history. And he seems unable to do so.
Well, what about his support within the black community itself?
Even many black Christian leaders who supported him during the campaign have been deeply disappointed that he seems to be so timid when it comes to addressing Christianity. You know, black Americans, whether they are on the right or on the left, are amongst the most faithful in this country in the sense that they self-identify themselves as Christians in very, very large numbers. And that was a great deal of Obama's charm and where he got a lot of his support. And even they are beginning to wonder, why do we have a president that doesn't seem to uphold America's Christian heritage as forcefully as he did during the campaign?
Where can we read more?
I urge all the listeners to read the piece that I just wrote. It is published at www.edmundburkeinstitute.org. Click on the link and the Founding Fathers said, and the name of the piece is Obama Ashamed of God? That's the question that I'm asking Americans to ponder during this holiday season.
Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you so much, Michael, for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Look, it's no surprise that Obama is losing support. Obama's low approval ratings are starting to take their toll. Why? Because trickle-up poverty has taken its toll on the United States of America. That's why. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I ran into someone the other day. I swear I haven't seen this guy in 20 years. He was a nice enough guy, I mean, and all of that. But let me put it to you this way. I won't mention names. You know what he does for a living? Nothing. He's a poet. Now, this is a man over 50. He is a poet. He's never worked a day in his life. Travels the world, gives speeches in bookstores. And, you know, we were once very close friends. I helped get a book of his published 20 years ago, a major publisher. I introduced him, then he stabbed me in the back, so I never talked to him again. But anyway, I ran into him, it was like an old friend, I said hello, I had a wonderful time. It's like, I haven't seen someone for 20 years, who remembers the anger, you know, I'm not one of those people. We talk and talk and talk. So I said, have you seen the New Yorker interview, have you seen the Playboy interview, yes. He immediately says to me, well, wait until you see I win the Nobel Prize. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. Do you know that half the schmucks sitting around in cafes in America, half of these putzes who read in bookstores and no one ever hears from, they actually delude themselves that they're going to win a prize. Their whole life is labored under the illusion that there's some great writer that hasn't been recognized in their life. And they all have a Jesus complex, by the way, that they're too good to work. They're too good for commerce. Have you seen that side of it, too? This is what's underneath all liberalism, the liberal intellectual. Why do you think the professors are so arrogant? They're making $100,000 a year or more. They're teaching, what, 5-8 hours a week? They call them contact hours. Contact hours, evil contact with students. The other times, they're traveling somewhere to, you know, socialism graduate courses on how to improve socialism in America. And they're always resentful of somebody who has more than them. You take a loser like Robert Reich, who is some kind of adjunct schmendrick at the University of California at Berkeley. Every other day, Robert Reich, a former economic advisor to Bill Clinton, A complete and total yuck. A guy who his grandfather was alive, I only wish the grandfather would grab his ears and shake his head and say, what are you complaining so much about the rich, you schmuck? You're a rich man yourself. What are you always trying to divide people, you putz? I ran away from the Tsar of Russia because of people like you. He'd shake him. But the grandfather is no longer with us. I know these types. They resent anybody who has a better car, a nicer wife, and better shoes. We've all met this type. But most importantly, they resent anybody who makes more money than them. No one knows who Robert Reich is, you know. No one even knows who he is. He appears every once in a while when economic questions, they bring him up. And then he's not seen there. You know, this isn't so bad a way to make a living when you think about it. We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. You know, I think we have to understand that America has gone to its apogee, and we're heading to the perigee. We're not in the perigee, but I mean, we've seen the height. We're on the way down. We're on the way down. You know, if you look, I'm sorry to bum you out, but if you want to show that, you know, how to win friends and influence people with nothing but this malarkey that the Republicans are going to come in and they're going to encourage tax incentives and cut back taxes, and then the guy who owns the business is suddenly going to hire your child because he's encouraged, he's going to take every dime he can in his own pocket. That's all. And he's going to spend it on himself. He's not going to create a squat for you. What, are you kidding me? I know guys who own restaurants. They all bellyache when they raise their taxes like it's coming out of their pocket. They wouldn't create another job. They just cut their waiter's income. That's all. I mean, let's be realistic. The primary rule of American society is greed and looking out for number one. Now, let's stop with the pie in the sky nonsense that the Republicans have the answer. They have nothing. They had their answer for 8 years. What'd they do to us? They give us George Bush, socialism light. Let's go back. Now, take a deep breath because I know you didn't want to hear it. You want to hear the malarkey. You want to hear the malarkey. The malarkey. Free market is going to create jobs for your child. You know, they're going to create nothing for your child. That's all. Let's go back in time. Post-war America. Post-World War II. Or post-war Italy, for example. The country was wrecked in Italy after the war. And so consequently, in many European countries, until they rebuilt their societies, children lived at home. They had no health care from the government. They had no care at all. They got sick, they took care of themselves. Or the family gave them something, like a bowl of pasta fazool, and told them to get their behind out of bed. You know, stop laying around like a malingerer. Stop making yourself sick. And either they got better or they got worse. They got better. What are you, promised eternal life somewhere? An eternal job, Teddy? Talking to my dog, he's looking right at me. You promised a house in the suburbs? No, that's not good enough for the children till age 26. They don't want a house in the suburbs. They want a loft. They want a big apartment. They want a penthouse. They want a penthouse in the meatpacking district so they can be out until 4 o'clock in the morning and then come home and not go to work. They're entitled to it. They're entitled to that. They're entitled to health care. They're entitled to a job. Where did you read this? Where is this written? You know what you're entitled to in America? Freedom. And you're entitled to make the best you can out of your life. That's about it. It's a free country. Make of it what you can. No one owes you anything. Where's it written? They owe you a house? They owe you health care? They owe you nothing. What do you mean they owe you? Out of my pocket, I owe you? I owe you nothing. I'm sick of these deadbeats in my country. I'm sick of the millions of illegal aliens sponging off my hard work. I get sick when I see them in the hospitals. I get sick when I see them destroying our schools. It makes me ill. Because I am the son of an immigrant, and I had to learn English to go to school. And let me tell you something. If you spoke another language, you know what happened? You fell behind. And guess what? It encouraged people to learn. They stumbled. They didn't do as well. They got D's instead of A's because they had a language problem. And then eventually they learned English. Some went on to school and made something of themselves. Now you teach them in Spanish? English as a second language? Why? Why are you pandering to these people? How did this happen that in my city of San Francisco, the ballot is in 8 to 10 languages? You mean you don't have the desire to learn the language of the land, but you have the desire to vote in Nancy Pelosi and the goon squad that runs this sick city? Why? Jury rigging, vote rigging, all the same. Just as you can fix a jury, you can fix a vote. The same thing. You can buy a vote. You can buy a jury. It makes no difference. All the same. MichaelSavage.com. It's one man's opinion. Don't take it too seriously. It's only the truth. And I realize that the truth is of no value to most of you. You want to hear what you want to hear, many of you. Some of you really want to hear what I really think. If I could throw a joke in now and again, fine. Savage.